Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and give us some feedback. Also, the Bald-Faced Truth podcast, it's brought to you by Shoe Mill, my favorite shoe store with locations in Portland and Salem and online at shoemill.com. Shoe Mill, where we put the world at your feet.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Jonathan Smith, the Oregon State football coach, will be joining us coming up. I got something later in the show, too. It should be a lot of fun. We were talking last week about things that you may remember and I may remember, but younger people in their early 20s or maybe a high school kid would think you're crazy. And we talked about VHS tapes, and we talked about the ability to call information and a busy signal. Kids today do not get a busy signal with call waiting. That was a big deal when call waiting came up. We also talked about calling time, and we called time on the show to get the time. Jonathan Smith is joining us. Am I bringing you back to your childhood by talking about those things?
Yeah, I can remember those things being a big deal. I remember caller ID. Turned out to be a big deal.
Yes.
You know, that was like the first way to be able to avoid phone calls. Now you can avoid them pretty quickly because you know who's calling.
Yeah.
But I love the caller ID on the phone.
If your cell phone rings and it's a number you don't recognize, do you ever answer?
50-50. It kind of, you know, if I had an idea or if something was going on, you know, sometimes I do, but plenty of times I do avoid, and kind of that's why I like people to leave messages, man. I think more and more people don't even like to leave messages.
Well, the people don't listen to them. Have you noticed that too? If you ever leave somebody a message, they'll go, "I saw you called. I just called you back." You know,
yeah,
they don't even listen.
Well, I like to now on my voicemail. Like, you can click it, and it kind of, you can read the message.
Yes,
I do that quite a bit.
You have a quarterback named Tristan Jebbia. He came on the show last week, and he was talking about working out. He's got a brother he can throw with, his dad, obviously. He set up a net that he can throw into. How much is it important that your quarterbacks are staying in shape right now?
Yeah, it's really important. I mean, that position for sure, really all these guys. And I do think it's just for their own health too, man. Want to, you know, keep working on their craft, but also just get outside and stay active. I'm with you on Tristan. Got on Zoom a bunch with the guy, and he's been working pretty hard.
What can kids do if they're high school quarterbacks who are listening to this and they're like, look, they're getting ready for this season. Maybe if you've got, you know, a mom or a dad that can run routes for you, that's an advantage. But what can they do during this time?
Yeah, I mean, well, being able to throw the ball, obviously it's great if you got someone out there to be able to catch it. And if you only had just one person, they can't sit there running routes the whole time. You can put them in the spots of the different routes where you'd be throwing, and then still work on your footwork and your balance and making throws on the move while you're waiting on someone to catch it for you. I do think guys can gain some and just studying the game, watching. So you can go on YouTube and watch old games and scenarios and best two-minute drives all time and watch the best of the best go down the field at the end of the game. So there's a lot of ways guys can just be adding to their game during this time.
Who was your guy to go out, grab a bag of balls, and go throw with when you were playing?
Yeah, Marty Maurer. He played tight end for us, you know. He's down there in Medford now, Southern Oregon. He played tight end. He's a roommate. We go out and played a bunch of catch during the off season or summertime.
Right now, you know, recruiting has changed, and, you know, I'm hearing people talk about more video recruiting, digital recruiting. Departments are hiring guys to do more video work. I saw a couple of Pac-12 schools are active doing that. Does it surprise you that kids are into that stuff? I mean, sometimes I look at it and I go, man, am I out of touch with 18-year-old kids? I got a 17-year-old in my household. She sits at the kitchen table and does videos all day, and I'm wondering, like, why haven't I noticed that?
Yeah, I mean, it is. They're just really comfortable. They've kind of grown up on it. And I do think on the recruiting end right now, so many recruits would be, visiting campuses and having conversations face-to-face, and that ability not to be doing right now. I think both sides, coaches and recruits, are apt to want to get face-to-face on FaceTime or Zoom. And then when we get a chance to get them on, we want to show them everything about the program. And so getting different position coaches and strength coaches and everything that comes with the – playing college football here and on and off the field, we want to expose them to that. So we feel like the last month, we've even just grown in that area of making that better and better.
Jonathan Smith with us, Oregon State football coach. Shoot me down if you can't talk too much about it, but there's been some traction in your recruiting world. Where do you feel good about the kids that you're bringing in or adding or getting commitments from? And in this time, it's an opportunity, right? I mean, you've got some extra time on your hands. Are you using that more in recruiting, or are you focused more on, where are you delegating your time right now?
Right. I think you're always trying to have some balance with recruiting. Never ends, and so you're always doing that, but also keeping as much as you can tabs and eyes on your own roster and your team. We feel really good on the recruiting end where we're at. Just giving you a little bit of overall picture, we have a smaller senior class. We got about 11 seniors on scholarship, and so this recruiting class that we're working on is just going to be a smaller group. So every year we're selective, but I think even this year we're even more selective of really going after guys that fit us that we want, knowing that we don't have the amount of scholarships to give out this year, which in a lot of ways I feel good about. That just means that, we got a lot of guys that have another year or two to play with us, and we got a veteran crew. So we do feel good on the recruiting end. I think taking advantage of this time, as unfortunate as time is, we've done some good work, and we've got some real momentum.
19 hours ago, you tweet out, damn right, and if people are not following Jonathan Smith on Twitter, you need to get yourself there. What does damn right signal to people following you?
Yeah, I think the Beavs got better. Beavs are always improving and always taking steps. And the Beavs got better about 24 hours ago.
For listeners who don't know, you have to be careful because there are guys you can talk about, guys you can't talk about. What are the rules on that?
Right. We can talk about perspectives, recruits, students that we're chasing until they officially sign with us in December. And so it's pretty common practice that, you just avoid giving any details on, who you're recruiting and what's been taking place, which is, just trying to stay playing by the rules.
For a guy like, you look at, let's just hypothetically say I'm committing to Oregon State. You can't talk about me until I sign. So I can tweet it. You can retweet it?
Yep. We can retweet recruits. But we can't make a direct, message saying,
"Hey, we got so and so
name."
Yeah.
Yep.
How young is too young? I can remember I was covering Purdue basketball years ago, and they offered scholarships to two kids that were 14 years old, and it was all contingent upon grades, and they could withdraw that at any time. But it was kind of a big show that they had talked to these two kids and said, "Hey, you're 14. Make a commitment to us." How young is too young for a kid to be committed to Oregon State?
Yeah, there's a lot that goes into that. I'm a fan of seeing a kid play some varsity football. And that's taking place younger and younger now. We got freshmen and sophomores doing it. But in the, this recruiting is competitive. And to really show the type of interest you have in someone, oftentimes you're offering them a scholarship. I think that's the beauty of a signing date, that nothing's official until a signing date. And so even when we feel like we're in the driver's seats with recruits, we're never fully there until we get them signed. And so, because you know how this thing goes, it changes from year to year. Sophomore might want to go to a particular place, but by the junior year, he's in a totally different spot. So it's always a moving target.
Yeah, I look at those. Neither one of those kids, by the way, ever showed up at Purdue. It was just sort of they were on them early, I guess. moment. How can you? What are you looking for a kid that plays varsity football? Is it as simple as, because you're kind of projecting, you know, how's that kid going to fill out? How is he going to develop as a player and a person? Are you looking at mom and dad and going, all right, dad's 6'5", kid's 6'1" or 2", he's got some growth there. What are you looking at?
Yeah, I mean, you're looking at a wide spectrum of different things. Parents, you know, what they look like, and how tall is mom? Because oftentimes, taller moms, you're going to get taller athletes. The position matters for sure. You're looking for beyond just what they show on tape, their athleticism, physical strength, skill sets, but also their drive and their, you know, can they be trusted, accountability, their desire for the game. Because this game's not easy. There's a lot of time that goes into this thing. And we want to fill our locker room guys with guys that just love football, love working at it, love practicing, love the weight room. All those you try to consider as you're looking to add to your roster.
You've got a football season that you probably have to prepare that, hey, we're starting on time, we're playing all these games. Meanwhile, all this information is swirling around about possibilities and what could happen. How do you manage that as a coach, and how do you manage your team's psyche amid that?
Right. You know, it is. There is some uncertainty, but you got a plan that as if you're going to play, which we're counting on doing. And I'm optimistic that we can didn't get to this fall and be playing some football games. Yeah. And so I've just kind of messaged it to our team is like, there's a light at the end of the tunnel here. We don't exactly know how long this tunnel is, but we know there is a light and we're going to be playing some football at some point, which I'm pretty confident we can get some games played this fall, optimistically thinking that way. And so we got to prepare that way. We've also talked to the guys about these things. You know, great ones are able to adjust. And all these guys are in different environments, different setups at home. At the same time, just being able to, just like we got to do in a game. You know, we're calling some plays offensively. They're running a different defense. We got to adjust. We're all having to adjust to the time, to knowing that there's a light at the end of the tunnel.
You got that trampoline in your backyard. Have you got on it during this pandemic?
Yeah, just a few times. You know, it's tough. You know, getting bigger or whatever, man. I used to be able to jump for days on that thing. Now I'm always sore when I get off of it. So, a couple of times, but I let the kids kind of, they're on it the most.
Isn't it amazing how kids, like you could put a five-year-old on there and they would just go bananas. And I get on there and I'd get dizzy. I'd have vertigo. My shoulder would be hurting. Aging sucks.
Oh, it does. I can, you know, jumping down on things now, my knees start to ache. Like you're saying, bouncing around the trampoline, getting sick. It's like, I'm totally different than it was 20 years ago.
All right. Before I cut you loose, you know, first of all, you got a lot of Oregon State fans that are tweeting at me saying they're excited about the season and recruiting, and they're you know, they love hearing you on the show. But you got to keep your sanity amid this. I noticed yesterday, I told my wife, I said, I have to get outside and I have to see open sky for a portion of the day because I'm in a radio studio. It's a home studio and it's like I'm in my bunker. What are you doing to kind of exhale a little bit, because you love being around your family, but you also need some Jonathan Smith time?
There's no doubt, man. I'm with you. I go outside a little bit to get away. I get hop on my bike. I've been doing more bike riding than I've done in a long, long time. We've got some sweet trails just behind the house here that I've gotten out and about. So that's one way I've tried to remove myself, because even I got an office probably similar to your setup, but the kids still keep on finding a way to walk in right at the maybe that ideal time. So getting outside is good for me.
There you go. Hey, I really appreciate you making time for us, and congrats on the tweets that signal that Oregon State is getting better. We'll talk about that after you get off the show, but keep it up, and we look forward to seeing some football this fall.
Yeah, always great talking to you. Thanks, John.
All right. Thanks, Coach. Appreciate it. There's Jonathan Smith, Oregon State's coach. He can't say it. He can't talk about it. I will talk about it. If you are an Oregon State fan, you have a right to be excited about kind of what's going on, and you should be following Jonathan Smith, because when he tweets, you know, damn right, as he did 19 hours ago, then he retweets Easton Mascarenhas' tweet saying that he is committed to Oregon State. And this is a 4-star linebacker that Oregon State has locked up. So not locked up, because until the signing day, nothing's locked up. But ultimately, you have a opportunity here as an Oregon State fan to kind of know this is signaling a recruiting development in Oregon State's world. These are weird rules. Shouldn't the NCAA, I mean, he can retweet the guy? Like Mario Cristobal, Jonathan Smith can retweet somebody who's saying they're committed, but they can't say, hey, excited to get a commitment from fill in the blank. Alabama Adriana can commit to go, I'm going to go play outside linebacker at Auburn, but Auburn can't talk about it until she signs on the dotted line. It's the rules that the NCAA have, it's so confusing, and social media muddles the whole thing. But all of us are left going, what does it mean? But a lot of Oregon State fans had already figured that out. But for those of you who haven't, if Jonathan Smith tweets, damn right, it means he has got a commitment from somebody. Mario Cristobal, on the other side of the coin here, has got his own stuff. You know, he essentially does a fist pump of his own on the other side when he gets a commitment. Little celebration going on. And I've actually seen it in real time with Mario Cristobal. I was at Pac-12 Media Day last summer when Mario Cristobal got a commitment. And I saw him get off the phone after he talked to a recruit. And he literally was like flexing, yes, you know, like you would. If your boss had called and said, hey, I'm giving you a raise. Terrific job. Hang up the phone. You might go, yes. That's what these guys are doing. It's that. And look, I get why the NCAA is trying to do it because they want to avoid coaches making a big deal about it. But, you know, you got like athletes. I saw Mario Cristobal about 4 days ago. Verone McKinley III basically said committed, and Mario Cristobal retweeted it, but he can't tweet about it or talk about it. All he can say is just getting started. Stuff like that. Our big splash is coming up. Plus, I've talked to Blazers president and Vulcan sports and entertainment CEO Chris McGowan about the possibility of a WNBA franchise in Portland. I've got more on that. We'll talk about that coming up. Leave it here. You got the BFT. So much to talk about on today's show, including the idea of a vaccination. I saw a story today about a possible vaccine for the coronavirus, and the thing that blew me away is that they had polled people to see, all right, if the vaccine becomes available, would you be vaccinated? Now, there are anti-vaxxers, there are vaccination people, all of that. I think it was really interesting to me, eye-opening to me, to see that the story said millions of people would refuse to be vaccinated. And it gave a variety of reasons why. Some people were saying, look, I don't want to be among the first. It looks like they're rushing this thing. What if there's a problem with it? And there was a whole other segment that just said, my body, my choice kind of thing, like the extension of that, and saying, look, I don't want to do anything. Like, and that's the same thing, the same blowback that people get with wearing a mask. Hey, it's my choice to wear a mask. If I don't want to wear a mask, don't make me wear a mask. Now you see Costco has come out and said, if you don't wear a mask, you're not going to be allowed inside the store. I want to ask Alabama Adriana, and I want to ask Judah, if they had a vaccine tomorrow, they said, we have a vaccine. It's been approved. Are you running to the front of the line? Are you taking a wait and see approach? Are you going, nah, I'm good. I'll rely on herd immunity.
I think I would have to see the tests and the numbers. So maybe the wait and see, but not wait that long, because I would think that if you had the vaccine that you could go in and do your regular stuff.
Yeah.
So wait and see, but don't wait that long.
I've always been a pro-vaccine person to the point where, like, one time they were given the flu shot, and they were coming around to the radio studios. And this was back in the day when they didn't have you sign up. They would just pop into the studio and say, you want a flu shot? And then a nurse would, you'd roll up your sleeve and the nurse would give you the flu shot and move on. I didn't even ask what they were doing. Like, hey, yeah, I'll take the flu shot right there. Put it right there on the arm. Judah, do you get the vaccine?
I think I wait and see. Part of that is I'm not really all that worried about my own health, and that's probably a little, I don't know what you call it, maybe a little proud to say. I'm not worried about my own health as much. And also, honestly, isn't that one of the reasons why we're doing pretty good in Oregon is, you know, we're doing all right with the social distancing and the preventative measures. It's not as urgent a need for me to go get a vaccine if it was available tomorrow. Because collectively, in our local area, we're doing pretty darn good.
Doing pretty good, but I also saw the map that the Oregonian had. If you haven't seen that, go to Oregon Live and check it out. It has a map of all the positive tests, and it was surprising to me to see that the concentration of positive tests more or less fell along the socioeconomic boundary. That was surprising to me. Maybe I'm stupid, you know, but I looked and went like, wow, you look at the more affluent areas in the state and you've got very few infections, and you look at the less affluent areas and you go, wow, there are just clusters in these few areas. And it was like the vast majority of people that maybe perhaps had to work, had to go into work, or maybe had to use public transportation were far more susceptible to it. And I wonder how that will affect sort of moving forward. Like if we had known all those things, you know, and by the way, we essentially have shut things down for 2 months, but there are a lot of people out there that had to go to work, had to work. They didn't have a choice and were really hamstrung by the idea of kids being out of school. We'll talk about that more later in the program. I would probably do the vaccine, but that's just me. I wouldn't put that much thought into it. Maybe I'm dumb for doing that. But my wife would probably say, "You got the vaccine? Didn't you read this? Didn't you read that?" I go, "Oh, no, I didn't." And, you know, maybe that's how I go. I don't know. That brings us, of course, to our big splash.
This is the one thing you absolutely need to know today.
Look at it. Where? Down there. But
the Big Splash. Brought to you by Sport Clips. Cut the wait. Download the new Sport Clips Haircuts app and check in.
Well, yesterday it was Marshawn Lynch. Today it's Jadeveon Clowney. While Jadeveon Clowney remains open to re-signing with the Seahawks, General Manager John Schneider has come out with public comments that lead people to believe that it's unlikely. Clowney's seeking $21 million per season at the start of free agency. He's dropped his asking price to around $17 to $18 million, according to ESPN. Seahawks don't have an offer on the table to Clowney at that number, and it looks like they'll be moving in opposite
directions. We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Baltimore.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Faced Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Faced Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.